The title of this talk is, What is the World We Want? Prefigurative Dharmic Activism. What is the world we want? Prefigurative Dharmic Activism. I was first introduced to the term prefigurative activism quite a long time ago, and it instantly made sense to me. And my understanding of what it means is that we try to create the world we want for ourselves and our communities now in a miniature way. It could be for 3 hours, for a day. It can be limited to a certain area. So we let go of, oh my gosh, the world is on fire, which it is, by the way, and has been for a long time. We let go of the delusion of thinking that we can fix everything. And instead, we empower ourselves and we say, okay, here's what I and my communities and people I know can do. Let's get busy. Let's do it. That could be acupuncture on the streets from 3 to 5 p.m. in a certain block. That could be something longer. So I and some of you on this meeting, in this meeting, are associated with the East Bay Meditation Center in Oakland, California, in the United States. We are a diversity and social justice and Buddhist-based urban meditation center. We're now in our 14th year, and this is our 14th year of experimental prefigurative Dharmic activism. So in other words, I mean, we have content, we have wonderful programs, and equally, maybe more of importance, is how are we together in community? Are we presenting like these wonderful programs, but we're all fighting each other in back of the scenes? No, that doesn't work. Of equal importance from what you see of East Bay Meditation Center is what you don't see. It's the fabric of our human relationships and our relationship to Oakland and our relationship to our natural environment and all of our relationships to all of our family members and our coworkers and how closely we're interconnected. So centered around that project, East Bay Meditation Center, we're saying we're trying to create the world in which we want to live, in which we want our elders to be cared for, in which we want our children, either by blood or adoption or spiritual, our younger folks to grow up in. What is the world we want? This talk is being recorded, and particularly for that reason, when I'm recorded, I always like to state the date because, and a little bit about what's happening, just a few things about what's happening in the greater world, because we are historical and we are political and we are situated peoples. Today is September 6th in the year 2020 on the calendar I use. I would describe this as a time of cascading crises, not crisis singular, crises plural. To state what is obvious to us now, but maybe someone will be listening to this recording 5 years or in another place from now. These cascading crises include the global COVID-19 virus pandemic. This is a global pandemic. Particularly, I wanted to use the word virulent, particularly afflictive and severe in the United States as well as in countries such as Brazil and some other places in the world, and relatively better in some other areas. However, it's global. when the pandemic started or really set in earlier this year in 2020, the climate crisis we're part of was already ongoing for many years and occupying more and more of the international news. At this time, I'm in California in the United States. There are widespread wildfires that are linked to climate crisis. And these wildfires are in other locations in the United States and in the world. And we are witnessing the profound effects of increasing temperatures and sea level rise around the world. Most, as we know, most and foremost affecting Black, Indigenous, and Brown communities, communities of color. Where I live in Oakland and many other places, due to wildfire smoke, the air quality is poor. Some days not breathable. We have air filters going constantly in this household because the family member with whom I live and I are multiply chemical sensitive. And on top of it all, we're now in a heat wave. So I got up this morning at 5 a.m. in the beautiful, slightly cool, yay, pre-dawn darkness. I shut down the windows and insulated shades at 7 a.m. to try to hang on to every last bit of cool air. And I live in a rented apartment. This is the attic, the renovated attic of a Victorian era house here in Oakland. And so by the time we say goodbye to one another in mid-morning, we'll be in for another sweltering day. And I'm mentioning all of this because there is no I, there is no we as human beings apart from the political, the social, the weather, the health conditions that are affecting us in this moment. It's all co-arising all at once. The question always is, what do we want to do with it? So what brings us together in this virtual space today as BIPOC, Black Indigenous People of Color, that's a kind of relatively new political term, I think it's a good one myself, is what's called Dharma Teachings and Practice. Spirit Rock Meditation Center is Buddhist based, and what's called the Buddha Dharma means the Buddhist tradition of the Dharma. Now, Dharma has many meanings. In its largest sense, in its kind of small d, it can mean phenomena. In its largest sense, it means something, I think, like law of the universe. We could also say just the way things work. This is not about what you or I want. It's not about what we like or don't like. It's the way things are. Or we could say keeping it real. Dharma is not sentimental. It includes feelings as phenomena, what we call emotions, feelings, human feelings. It includes it along with everything else. It's not about feelings. It's not sentimental or soft focus or squishy, because those qualities actually will not help us now. And I do not mean that we should repress our emotions, quite the opposite. What will help us now? Around March or April of this year, 2020, when the pandemic hit the United States, really sank in here in California, in Oakland, it was around mid-March that we entered shelter in place. And then there have been periods as elsewhere of opening up, and then the virus rate, the COVID-19 spikes, and then close down, open up, close down. We may be in this for a while, folks. So in the spring of this year, I read a quote from the activist Sonia Renee Taylor, whose book and website is called The Body is Not an Apology. Sonia Renee Taylor is, I think, Black identified, African American identified, is an activist and author. And I've been using this quote ever since. It's widely found on the internet. Ironically, was originally attributed to Brené Brown. And Brené Brown immediately said, no, it wasn't me. It was Sonia Renee Taylor. So it was originally attributed to a white woman. And in fact, it's Sonia Renee Taylor. Sonia Renee Taylor says, we will not go back to normal. Normal never was. Our pre-corona existence was not normal, other than we, and I'm going to pause here because we notice Sonia Renee Taylor says we, I think meaning we all, other than we normalized greed, inequity, exhaustion, depletion, extraction, disconnection, confusion, rage, hoarding, hate, and lack. We should not long to return, my friends. We are being given the opportunity to stitch a new garment, one that fits all of humanity and nature. End of quote. So this passionate call is for us to rise to the occasion and to create something new. It's also not new because widespread suffering is not new. Oppression is not new. Just stepping back a little bit or moving back a little bit in time, a famous quote by author Arundhati Roy says, another world is not only possible. She is on her way. On a quiet day, I can hear her breathing. Just stop for a moment. I invite you to feel the intimacy of that quote. I'm a mother. So when my child was born, I never had another kid. And I couldn't believe how much fun it was and how wonderful it was just to sit and listen to him breathe and watch him sleeping. Like, it was totally cool. I guess I'm biologically programmed. And you know, anyone who bonds with another mammal, that's kind of the case. So this other world is, what I'm saying is, it's very intimate. It's very intimate. This was written for the Occupy movement, which took place in 2011. Taking another move back slightly, the French poet, surrealist Paul Eluard, who lived from 1895 to 1952, said, apologies for my pronunciation, il y a un autre monde, mais il est dans celui-ci. Translated usually as, there is another world, but it is in this one. And even more commonly translated is, there is another world. When I first heard this as a young poet in my 20s, I thought, great, where is this other world? There is another world, and it is in this one. Eluard supported the Moroccan Revolution as early as 1925. And in January 1927, he joined the French Communist Party and then was excluded from it in the 1930s. So coming right up to the present now, a few days ago, August 28th, 2020, the Black National Convention in the United States was live streamed globally on YouTube. I was actually teaching that evening, and I tuned in beforehand. Angela Davis, who lives in the Bay Area in California, was brought on as an honored elder in the Black Liberation Movements. And what I heard her say when I tuned in was something like this. I didn't have time to go back and check the exact quote, so forgive me if I'm not exact. I'm pretty sure that I'm accurate, that what Angela said was, we know what we oppose. What do we want? And she's not the only activist, leading activist, who says, all right, we know in great detail what we don't want. Can we envision in as great detail the scenarios of what we do want? This is our challenge, I'm suggesting. So it's my question to each of you and me today, as Black Indigenous people of color, what do we want? Can we feel it, image and imagine it in any way? Can we hear it breathing? What does this new way of being smell like, taste like, sound like? How exactly does it work on a daily basis in our everyday actions and interactions? So relatively easy to inspire one another, and of course, necessary to listen to that wonderful song, Andra Day, I Rise Up. Sometimes when I'm having trouble getting up in the morning because I'm overwhelmed with everything that's going on, I listen to that and it gets me up. It gets me going. It's more accessible to say, I have a dream. And it's accessible to reach for those inspirations which are broad and well known. We also need to look at, again, how this works in our everyday actions and interactions. What is this global new garment, to use Sonia Renee Taylor's metaphor, that does not operate through extraction and exploitation? Can we feel it, image it, and imagine it in any way? What is it to you, your family, your people, your neighbor? How are our elders, our people with disabilities, our young children cared for? What does quote unquote, quote, work look like? How do we quote unquote play together? What happens when we flush our toilets? Is there enough water? Is there enough clean water to drink and cook with? Are there toilets at all? What do we eat if we have something to eat? Many people do not. Who grew it? Who harvested it? Where did we buy it? And this connects for me to the issue and question, if we know the world we want, at least in part, what are we willing to give up? What will we have to give up? So my friend Kazu Haga, who's also been my meditation student, who gave a wonderful talk for Spirit Rock not too long ago, is author of this very well-selling book called Healing Resistance, A Radically Different Response to Harm, published by Parallax Press, which is, again, here, it's in Berkeley, in California. And Kazu is a very long-time nonviolence trainer, increasingly well-known at this point. And he and I were having a private conversation about capitalism, in which I said, for at least 20 years, my position has been, if people want to talk to me about the evils of capitalism, I'll say, I will not argue with you in any way, and I'm really not interested in hearing about all the evils. What I want to hear from you is, what is your alternative? I'm really curious. That is my question. That's what I want to hear. I want to go to the world we want. So Kazu chuckled and said, yes, that he's once heard someone say, a good question to ask is, after the revolution, who will operate the plumbing? Will we have plumbing? part of my background is monastic. I've been a Buddhist nun. I was a very bad Buddhist nun. However, I tried, and I spent some time in training in South Korea in 87, 88 in a very large nuns training temple. And there was a wing of this really big, ugly modern temple. It just wasn't really that good looking, utilitarian, that was reserved for retired nuns. Like, they were mega old and had been, a lot of them had been nuns for many years, and they all had flush toilets. However, the rest of us, which was most of us, had outhouses. That was a fact of life on that mountain. Cordless phones, not cell phones, cordless phones were just starting to come in at that time. So who's going to operate the plumbing? Disability justice sometimes says all of us or none of us. In other words, let's not move forward as a society, leaving those who are called disabled or differently abled behind. And that points to a conundrum, a contradiction of moving into something new and better together with people we don't like, don't trust, and people who have harmed us. So we don't all agree with this. I'm just putting this forth as my personal understanding. It's my personal understanding of Dr. King's beloved community, that this is not about separating out, someone separating out the good people from the bad people and finding some way to get rid of the bad people. If we think about that for a while, I have. Even though there are people that, frankly, I would be happy if I never saw again in my life. Really. That's actually in the traditional metta meditation. Tanisaru Bhikkhu Jeff DeGraff says, he's a Theravada Buddhist monk. He said, you know, traditionally, he said, this isn't about liking everybody. He says, traditionally, you could say about scorpions and poisonous snakes, and I add on toxic people, may you be happy, may you be peaceful, and may you go far, far, very far away from me. Because that's real. And however how far they go, they're still going to be on this planet or somewhere in the world. How do we move into what is new? One set of models is called Just Transition. That's capitalized, Just Transition. I heard about it through the Movement Generation organization here in Oakland, California. According to Wikipedia, Just Transition is a framework developed by the trade union movement to encompass a range of social interventions needed to secure workers' rights and livelihoods when economies are shifting to sustainable production, primarily combating climate change and protecting biodiversity. The concept can be considered an ecological application of economic conversion. And it says economic conversion was developed in the 1980s when anti-war activists sought to build a coalition with military workers and give them a stake in the peace economy. To give them a stake in the peace economy. So again, how do we move forward together? This doesn't really have to do, again, with whether we like it or not, whether we like the people or the beings or not. We are here together in my point of view. So giving up things we find pleasurable and necessary, we may even think they're necessary, though they might, may not be, that are pleasurable to, in order to get a greater pleasure, the pleasure of freedom and liberation. This is part of the Buddhist practices and teachings, part of what is called the Buddha Dharma, the Buddhist expression of Dharma, the universal law. In Mahayana or Northern Buddhism, which is the tradition from which I come as originally a student of Korean Zen, and I've also studied Japanese Zen, and now Vipassana and Theravada Buddhism, which is Southern Buddhism. So in this Northern Buddhist tradition, Mahayana, that means great way, liberatory movement means working to eliminate what are called the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion or ignorance. Ultimate liberation, what we might call enlightenment or awakening, spiritual awakening, means the total eradication of greed, hate, and delusion, and the cutting of them at their roots so they will never arise again, like 100%. I don't know about you. I really sort of can't imagine that I'll never be annoyed or angry, that I'll never have aversion or hatred, and certainly can never imagine that I'll never be ignorant again. So it's a big task, and the total eradication would indicate that one is a totally enlightened Buddha, theoretically. Haven't met one yet, and it's a worthy goal. So from a dharmic point of view, what is our launching pad, so to speak, in the opportunity to, as Sonia Renee Taylor says, to stitch a new garment, one that fits all of humanity, all of nature. And we wouldn't even have to say nature unless we felt separate from it. We wouldn't even have to say the body or somatics unless we were separated and dissociated from our bodies. You try to talk to, if there's a child who has had like a good enough environment, who feels safe enough, who feels loved enough, you don't have to talk to them, some young child, about your body. They're in their bodies. Usually they're playing and dancing and running around, and it's the nature of most children to be extremely active. And that means embodied. Before we have that mind-body split. So what is the opportunity? What's our launching pad for this, the opportunity in this truly horrible intersection of global crises where we now find ourselves? Because all of this has, of course, been accompanied by economic collapse. What new world do we want, and how do we get it? I propose, let's start in community. Deep community. And I invite you to just think about what it is that means to you. Hold on, I just lost a piece of my talk. It's on the floor. Or it may not have printed out. So I invite you to consider what deep community means. And I'll just pause a moment, because each of us will have our own experience. Each of us will have our own embodiment of deep community. And I'll also say that my understanding of the word community is that the root is the same root as that of communication, and the same root as that of communing with. in order for there to be cooperation, in order for there to be true love, in order for there to be compassionate and visionary action, there needs to be communication, communing, which includes communing with what we might call spirit, and there needs to be communing, very importantly, with ourselves. One Japanese Zen master described Zen Buddhist meditation as deep communication. In all forms that I know of, prayer, a contemplation of meditation, and there are many, what happens is deep communication when it is working for the practitioner. We drop down. We drop down into our biggest selves, our most expanded selves. In mindfulness meditation, we're not going into a trance. We're not reciting mantras. And those are all fine practices. I do have a mantra practice. We're not visualizing things. We're simply allowing ourselves to be quiet. And we're noticing and observing with kindness our body sensations. We're noticing that thinking is happening. And we might notice certain thoughts that occur over and over. We're noticing that emotions are arising. And the aha moment in mindfulness meditation is when we begin to clearly see over and over and over again that everything we notice, this is 100%, everything we notice arises, it exists for a certain span of time, and then it changes. It might change a little, it might change a lot. It does change. Sometimes this is formulated as everything arises and passes away. Arising and passing away. Arising and passing away. Arising and passing away. Thoughts, emotions, physical forms, governments, civilizations, ecosystems, the lifespan of a mosquito, the duration of a geological formation, our planet itself. And when you touch into this for yourself, if you do, then you will have grasped the law of the universe. You will have grasped Dharma. And you will be able to root yourself in the confidence. Because this is not pessimistic. This is not at all nihilistic. We might think, oh, due to impermanence, my current happiness is going to turn into unhappiness. And we might forget what the return shift, I call it the return shift of that is, unhappiness can also become happiness. Oppression can become forms of liberation. The unpleasant can become the neutral or the pleasant. And then with constant movement through all the other states as well. In the midst of this constant churning in the midst of this potential for evolution and revolution. That was the Grace Lee Boggs term, R in parentheses, R evolution. In the midst of this constant evolution and revolution, what is the world that you want? And what is the world that we deserve as Black, Indigenous, people of color, for our descendants and for the many beings?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.